A big episode today. We are so excited to share this with you. Today, we meet the lady who has the best hair in Derbyshire, or perhaps Nottinghamshire, actually, is the most glamorous of any ball, and who happens to have started a company over half a century ago, which has transformed both of our lives. No pressure then.
Margaret Miles Bramwell, the founder of Slimming World, is on the podcast today talking psychology. So I guess we better get out of our pajamas, brush our hair, put a bit of lippy on, and as we always say, cue the ukuleles.
Welcome to Slimming World Podcast. I'm Claire. She's Anna. She's Anna. I'm Claire. We are two crazy people who love Slimming World in so much that Anna made it her career, didn't you?
I did indeed. My life's work.
And I am what I call as a mere member of some 8 years, my fifth journey at Slimming World, but somehow the journey when I became a member under Anna 3 years ago seems to be sticking, and I'm on the way to Target finally in 2021. This is something that we do every week. There's a new episode. If you're new, then welcome. Please follow. Please subscribe. An episode comes out every Monday. Do tell your fellow members in group who might not know about this, that it's something that they can access to. We're a group between group whenever you need us. And actually, in case you didn't know why we're called the Slimming World Podcast, we did not invent the term Slimming World. We're actually sponsored by an actual company called Slimming World, who are a UK-based weight loss organisation. And that company was founded in Derbyshire in 1969 by a lady called, you've guessed it, Margaret Miles Bramwell. Back then, Margaret was a hard-up 21-year-old with a young daughter and a weight problem. And by the way, that's her words, not ours, by the way. Yet it was at her yellow kitchen table in her first home where she began working on this new approach to weight loss, which would offer freedom from hunger and from humiliation. Unfortunately for us, some 52 years on, she's still at it. And she has changed not just our lives, but millions of others across the world.
Today, we are totally delighted to share some Zoom time with Margaret. And boy, are you guys in for a treat. From understanding why group is not just about food plans, and more than that matters, it's all about the science behind food optimizing and image therapy. Where did it come from? So this is an episode you really might just want to tell everyone to have a little listen about in group. But before we get into it, we would say check out her book. It's a mad run through her life, her business, her wider ethos, and why and who makes up the Slimming World programme. Her book, Wild Women Do and Don't Regret It, is available for you to get via Slimming World Consulting Group, and is also available on the Kindle as an audiobook via Audible.
Okay, so I guess we better welcome today's guest. We've done the formal introductions, but Margaret is on the line. She's connected via a satellite in somewhere far sunnier than where we are today. How are you doing, Margaret?
Doing fine, thank you. I think I would like you to do all my introductions, though, because what a brilliant introduction.
This is like, I can't tell you, our listeners will tell you, like, since the day we started, I've been chomping at the bit, like, can we talk to Margaret? So the fact they let me loose, they've had to do it on Zoom for a number of reasons, but one is they're worried about your security and me, is what they've told me. So thank you so much for joining us today in the yellow boxes.
Most welcome. Thank you for asking me anyway.
I mean, the first question we have to ask, right, is topic of food, which is something that we all love, yeah? If we were to come to Chez Margaret Mansions of an evening, what would we find on the menu? Like your favourite free food dinner of all time?
Well, what you would find, certainly today, is I make a lot of really healthy vegetable soup. I love vegetable soup. I love getting all that fibre. I throw everything into it, herbs and spices and you name it. I nearly took my head off yesterday because I got too much chilli pepper in. But
you know that feeling, don't we, Claire?
Yes. I once made some fishless fish cakes for Anna whilst making and recording the podcast. There were tears involved at the end.
It was nearly a trip to A&E, let's be honest. It was bad. She got her tablespoons and teaspoons mixed up.
This was pretty hot. So, and then after that, it would be, for me, probably some chicken dish, but for Tony, it's always fish. He likes fish, so I have to do it for both. I'll eat fish, but not every day. And Tony sort of sticks rigidly to his fish. Or vegetarian, we can go vegetarian as well. That's okay.
So are you a sins in your meals kind of gal, or are you like a sins as a treat kind of gal? Like, how do you use your sins? Because we get this, we get asked this all the time on the podcast.
Well, a bit of both, I suppose, really. If I need to put something in to make it taste nice into a main meal, I'll use the sins like that. But usually I'll save it for my favourite sins, which tends to be nighttime. And tends to be a crunchy bar. I love my crunchy bars.
Oh, I love a crunchy.
Oh, they're so nice, aren't they?
And good.
One of the least painful ones in terms of sins, aren't they? But really nice.
Yeah, least painful. I like that. Yes, they're not too expensive, are they?
No, they're not. No. That's okay. Ooh.
Fantastic. I mean, we're going to kind of get into so much to do with groups, with, you know, image therapy, sins, all kinds of things, and how the plan has kind of developed and changed. And as you've learned more throughout, like, the company, I guess, like, maybe it's worthwhile, because the thing that I didn't know as a member was really about your story and what I got out of reading your book. I chose to read it, Anna chose to listen to it, so we listened to all platforms available of your book. But I didn't really know, like, how much the principles, like, when you were sat at that little yellow table, you know, thinking of these ideas, you know, with post-it notes or notepads, scribbling late at night, how much of, like, the real thought process back then is really still a fundamental part of the company today. I mean, does that surprise you?
No, because we're dealing with human beings, and you only have to have a conversation to find out that the fears, the same fears and the same things bother people. They always did. You know, people haven't really changed. Basically, they haven't changed. Okay, different ways of eating and different parts of the culture have changed. Like, wine's come into it for women. When we first started, I never used to have to worry too much about the alcohol intake for the ladies. But that's all changed. But people haven't changed, and people's sensitivities and what hurts them and what reduces their self-esteem and all those things are still there and always will be. And I was just inspired by, I suppose I got mad, to be honest. I got really angry about the way that I had an imagine about how groups worked, and they didn't. It didn't work like that, like my imagine at all. You know, watching people being interviewed on TV, and it sounded so fantastic. And then the reality was this humiliation that went on in a more formal group. There was groups that were quite formal and groups that were just unstructured completely. And both ends of the spectrum left you really in desperate need for something more sensible than that. So I suppose I got annoyed, and that gives me energy. So I don't want it to stay like that. I didn't like the way people were being treated. I didn't like the way overweight people were being treated. And all I had to do was analyse how did I feel when I was spoken to like that. And I'm not alone. I'm not unusual. I don't like being spoken to like that. I don't like to be, you know, subtle though some of the humiliation might have been. And some wasn't so subtle. So, no, I didn't like it. It didn't encourage me to go on. In fact, I think a lot of us, especially people who are used to having a rule book thrown at them, I've noticed it with COVID and everything, that whatever rules we're given, we seem to have this need to want to find a little way through and around and just to tweak it a bit. Let's tweak it a bit, you know. So one of the things that for me was important was the way it shouldn't be prescriptive. It shouldn't be a rule book that you had to do this and you had to do that and don't do this and don't do that. And you'll find that in our membership book, We never say restrict, don't do it. There's no negative. There's no negativity about the book at all. It was so important to me to give people freedom. So there's nothing to rebel against, basically, or so little to rebel against, because you've got this enormous list of free foods.
Yeah, it's choice power, isn't it, really? Absolutely. Like, actually, you're choosing to change your relationship with food. You're not beating yourself up. Because, I mean, like, the one section of the book here where you kind of describe, I wanted to help people like me, shed the misery or the burden of excess weight. You don't need to suffer unnecessarily. And you talk about what drove you, you know, the quest to create a slimming club where every member could take control of their weight problem without the lectures, without judgment, without deprivation and without shame. And actually, some of the articles that you've written for Slimming World over the years, you talk about freedom from guilt, stop the self-sabotage. If there is one like topic that we discuss every single month on listeners' questions, it is always how, like, I keep falling off the wagon, how do I get back on it? And it always seems to fall back to that guilt and that shame that all of us, men and women, male and female listeners, male and female members, hold on to a lot. And I think this ethos about discovering really that weight loss is more than just like the food that you eat. There's something more going on in our minds that you were curious about, I think.
Yeah, we're not robots. That's the point. We are not robots, and we are human beings, and we are perfectly imperfect. Otherwise, we wouldn't be interesting people at all, would we? We'd be robots, and we're not robots. So getting rid of the guilt is like, there's no need for guilt. There's no need for judgment. You just got to accept the fact that we are human and we are perfectly imperfect in the sense of doing everything by the book. By the way, I was once on a judging panel some years ago for the Man of the Year. And the guy came in and he'd lost 15 stone. And I was asking him about his sins and how many sins he had. And did he vary them at all? And, you know, because when I talk about flexible sins, the spirit of that was sort of lost with some of the women, and they would really abuse the idea, you know. But so this guy said, no, I do vary it. So I said, how many sins a day do you have then? And he said, well, some days I have the 15, the recommended 15, but some days I have 14 and a half. And some days I have 15 and a half. This was the degree of him being naughty and rebellious, you know. It's like, it was just incredible.
See, sins is interesting, isn't it? Because Anna has told me, you know, as a consultant, about the ethos behind sins. And we do get asked, you know, even now, sometimes in group or the podcast, why are sins called sins? What's the why about? And you kind of talk about in the book about where this came from. And I love the idea about like the fun and the mischief like behind it. Do you want to kind of share your version of the story?
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, what a miserable life if we can't have a sense of humour about things, you know.
Yeah, especially now.
Especially now, yeah, you know, finding the joy in what's going on now is not so easy, but a sense of humour gets you through an awful lot of things. And for me, people talked about food like it was sinful and it was evil to do this. They were so judgmental about what they were eating, and it just seemed to be silly. So I called all the things that normally are certainly going to slow you down if you eat too many of them, I called them sins, S-I-N-S. And then our company were getting a bit of a bashing from the nutritionists and everything, that how dare we refer to food as, you know, give food this quality of good and evil and everything. I went, oh, come on, you know, sort of lighten up. It's supposed to be funny. But they didn't see it like that. So I took pity on our guys and said, okay, let's change sins. But I'm not changing it a long way, because you need sins, you need the free food, you need the healthy extras, you need the activity. The whole process is synergistic. And sins, S-Y-N-S, it's all about the synergistic approach that we use, because it's everything together in a way you can live with, in a way that's not killing you, in a way that you enjoy your life. Like, the last thing we want people to have a miserable life. They've got to enjoy this life, this new life. Excuse me.
Is that the doorbell?
Yes.
Oh, parcel delivery.
what is it? Is it this? I don't know.
Well, this wasn't something that we anticipated happening in the podcast.
Coming.
Normally, Anna's dog has a wee on a foot or something like that, but a doorbell for Margaret.
They're safely downstairs.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, while the builders.
Is there? Hello. Can you leave the parcel on the door? At the door. Thank you. Okay. Super.
And my dogs are barking at your doorbell. That's the most brilliant thing. My dogs. Dash Hound's hearing your doorbell. My dogs think it's mine, so my dogs are going mental.
Right. I don't know why nobody else is answering the door. My husband's a bit deaf, so I don't suppose.
Well, my dogs aren't, because they would answer the door for you. That's miles away. They think it's ours.
Well, this seems like a perfect analogy that sometimes you make a plan and things don't always work out as you thought they might. So. Managing bumps and having a bit of flexibility in a plan is probably quite essential from what you were saying.
Essential, absolutely.
So one of the stories that jumped out at me, Anna, you talk about this in group, don't you, about, when we use the for and the against lists, about lovable Auntie Laura versus unlovable Auntie Elsie. Like, do you want to kind of recap the story? Because you're the consultant. I mean, I just lap this up because I think this shows to me as a member, it made me think, that makes me curious to why do I do that?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
Yes. I didn't realise that I had an image of somebody who was sort of little and thin and thin lips and everything as being the last thing I wanted to be. And I really have such lovely fond memories of my Auntie Laura, who was like a big stuffed sofa. And she forever got a cooking pot on the fire in those days. So I'm going back, into the 60s, 50s and 60s here, when I sort of soaked up her lovely homeliness and loved it. My mum was quite strict and the house was always immaculately tidy, but Auntie Laura's house was always a bit messy, food, always on the go. And it was just such a lovely, homely way to be. And I realised that I wanted to sort of have that feeling of being able to... She seemed to love everybody and everybody was welcome. And I wanted to be like that. And finally, the penny had to drop that you don't have to be her size to be like that, and that you don't have to be this very judgmental person that Auntie Elsie was to be slim. It doesn't work like that. But certainly it was something that I didn't realise was deep in my brain. And you have to give yourself time. It took me ages to sort of pull it out. When I was making a for and against list for myself, it took ages to keep thinking and adding to this list when I thought about something. And a lot of the for and against, I think, for a lot of people is that it's an imagined thing that is just not real. So you might put against losing weight is you have to give up everything. Again, I was only talking to a guy the other day and his fear is he's the cook of the house but is busy at work and he relies on takeaways. And his fear is that he's got to give up takeaways and he won't and he'll come home hungry and he's got to start cooking and he don't want to do all that. And that's one of his fears that is stopping him even thinking about it. His wife is a member, but he's the one who does the cooking. And these fears that are unreal and giving up all the things he likes, he loves. He says he loves his chips, like giving up chips. Or, he doesn't understand that you can either have semi world chips or if you did want real chips, if you like, that have been deep fried. Don't have so many, but load up loads of other stuff on your plate and you never have to go hungry. And you've got all that choice and you can choose how to spend your sins. And if you want to spend them on real chips, if you like, spend them on real chips. You know, what is your thing? And find a way for you that fits you and your lifestyle and your likes and what matters to you. But people build up these feeling of fear, like on the not to do it list would be, I've got to give up chocolate forever. I mean, it's not real. Do you know what I mean? There's an unreality about this list of why not to lose weight and get into a healthy weight. And to choose your weight as well. It matters that you choose your weight I hate the idea that we're all so bloody superior that we can choose people's weight for them. If you don't want to be 8.5 stone or whatever weight it is you think you should be, you're never going to give yourself to doing to changing your life, because you're resisting something that is not, it's not your desire to be like that. You worry about other things, you know, if you're that weight, you won't like this. And it just goes on. And people are adults and they can make their own decisions. And if they know that they're at an unhealthy weight and it is affecting them and will affect them in the future, it's their decision. It has to be their decision. We can't make those choices for them. It's got to be their decision, and they've got to want to do it. And there'll be ways, if they can think about it, that if they were at a weight that they would be happier, or a size is perhaps a better way to say it, that would make them happy, what are the benefits of that? And that we need to focus on those benefits, those things that they'd love to be, love to have, love to do, the activity they'd love to be able to take that they can't take at the moment, and all sorts of things that they're missing at the moment and feel bad about at the moment. It's we really need to focus on all that positivity so that people don't focus on unreal things like you've got to give up chocolate, because of course you haven't got to give up chocolate. You haven't got to give up anything. We made sure that we're in food optimizing, you didn't have to give up anything.
I remember when I first joined a group all that many years ago, that was one of the things that struck me, was the power of the group gave me that. Like, because I tried everything before, you know, I've been overweight since I was about 4 years old. And I remember just thinking, well, there's another way. And these people get what I'm saying. And I think that's what is so special about Slimming World, isn't it? It's that power of the group. Did you know that from day one? Was that like something that drove you?
It was in my imagination, because I'd not seen a group function like that. I'd seen a group sitting there being either told off when they got weighed and then sitting there and being lectured to. And I'd seen a group where it was basically like a coffee morning or whatever, and it's with no structure at all. And for me, it was soon so real that we would all help each other. That was always in my head. The bit that I missed, the bit that I didn't realise would be created through Slimming World, was all this wonderful companionship that would go on for years, making friends for years, and having, you know, all, it was just so lovely. I just didn't expect that we would make such inroads into communities and into creating communities that were being lost, really. I mean, you know, I came from a mining village. My dad was a miner, and chapels were the community in the village. It wasn't just the pubs, but the chapels. And they were always putting on entertainment, and you're always having meetings for different things. The Methodist chapels were great for it, and it seemed to be a mining thing. So the whole village had this community spirit. You knew people, you got to know people because of these activities. And that I never thought at all that we would be creating these new communities where people get together, they have Slimming World evening meals, suppers, Slimming World suppers, and they get together in one another's houses. I'm not saying this year, but this is how it's all developed. It's not just in the group, is it? They make friends. I just find that the groups are so powerful when you've got everybody there who they are interested in what other people are doing, and it helps them if they can be part of helping someone else. I think it's really strange because it helps you when you're helping someone else.
It's incredible. I mean,
you always say that. Claire always found that.
Because I've moved house multiple times. And so, in fact, in the last year, I moved to a new town. I had to leave Anna, had to go to another consultant. I had to go to another group, move to a place. Then lockdown hit. And so I didn't know anybody who was local. But the way that I formed friends was initially through switching to a new Slimming World group. When I travelled and worked on the road, the first year that I lost my 4 stone, I was working out of hotels, backs of my car. But I always, even when I couldn't go to one of Anna's group, I went to Bristol, to London, to groups there, to Coventry. And I checked in, and I wouldn't know anyone, but I knew what I would be, what I was expecting when I walked through that door. It had structure. I knew what I was kind of signing up for. And although it was quite nerve-wracking to go to a different group with different people where you don't know anyone, the family feel, I think, always made me feel, but that's an option for me, and anybody can do that. And that's just me kind of looking from an outsider as a member, you know.
Well, you feel a kinship, don't you, whatever, whenever you walk into a group. Mm.
But you know how you talk about that fear? That was me. It took me 6 attempts to walk in the door. I sat in the car park of 6 groups. And I think it is that, what people who maybe are listening that don't go to group, it's that there's something so much deeper, and that is come from what you created as being image therapy, and how the powerhouse when you walk into a group, it isn't, like you say, a coffee morning. It's much deeper and much more intricate than that. Like, how did image therapy, from where it started all those years ago to where it is now, how's that journey happened? Can you take us through that a little bit?
When I started, I thought what I did was easy.
Yeah, it's not. I can tell you.
But I thought it was. Yeah. I thought, well, if you want to help people, then you're interested in what they're doing. You want to use your brain to find out a way to help them get over a hurdle or whatever. So for me, it felt very natural to ask a lot of questions and to find out what they needed and to be able to go home and think about it. Might not have the answer that particular day, but when I went home to think about it, I might come up with some answers. And then to find that I could include the group anyway. I didn't have to rely entirely on myself. I could include the group. And the group then could really help. And a lot of the help was really practical help about food and recipes and things like that. But also the fact that they'd been there and they'd overcome it. And even if what they were saying didn't give the solution to a person who was struggling with a particular thing, it gave that person thinking time. So I used to like to leave them with a moment to think about it, go on to somebody else, then come back to them and ask them if they'd thought of a way through. Because for me, that final session, that final section of image therapy, where we're looking towards the future, where we're looking about what's going to happen from the minute you walk out of that door for the following week, and you still got the future to write. It's so exciting. You still got the future to write. You can't change what happened last week, but you can change what's going to happen this coming week. And for me, that's the most exciting bit. So I like to make sure that people were really set up well psychologically to be able to think the way through that and make plans for the following week. Think about if anything was going to crop up the following week that might trip them up, and make plans to work around it. So that was my idea. I thought it was easy. I was wrong.
So, make it look easy. I think that's the thing. When you train to be a Slimming World consultant, you have no idea, because if you come from a group and you've got this brilliant consultant, it looks so simple. And then you find out the intricate ways, and it's just a fascinating like jigsaw puzzle to put together, isn't it?
Isn't it? I know. I loved it. And it was all, I like a challenge, and I used to get plenty of challenges. So I thought it was great fun. And we used to have such a lot of laughter in the groups as well. It was so great. It was just a lovely family feeling. It was like a happy family. So for me, I wanted to create that. And in 1986, I left the company for a few years, as you know, and then I came back in 86, and it was on the floor. And I spent the following year writing Secrets of Success, writing the manual, and thinking of different ways to put across what I hadn't really put into a training program as such. I just was looking for people with the right qualities who genuinely wanted to help somebody. But putting it together then and calling it a new name and calling it, I used to call it individual, what did you used to call it? Group therapy with individual attention. That's what I used to call it.
Catchy. Sorry. It's very catchy, isn't it, that one?
So calling it image therapy. So, you know, and having image stand, it was a mnemonic, you know.
Yeah, you should say, I only learned by reading your book what this actually stood for. Like, Anna.
How bad am I as a consultant that I haven't told you in every... But no, I should protect myself. It's just so seamless you didn't need to know, Claire. No. That's my caveat.
You didn't need to know.
No, you just knew you were losing weight and it was all digging myself a big hole.
Individual motivation and group experience is the therapy, is the group therapy that I imagined it should be, that I believe in, that I can see the group do so well with it when we do practice it. And it's it looks seamless, but as you say, you're quite right, Anna, there's a lot to it when you really get down to it. So that 1986 was a big year, and into 1987 producing the manual and had to sort of repackage things, really, things that were always meant to be, always had been there, but I hadn't done a very good job of packaging them, I don't think, to be able to explain it. So this is some, how many years later is that? 17 years later, repackaged, had to do something to help the company because people just had lost faith that they needed groups anymore. And that nothing could have been further from the truth, nothing.
Well, and this is really apt, isn't it, right now? Because there are so many different types of plans out there. We actually did an episode where we kind of looked at the keto plan to the one food only plan. A lot of places will kind of say, here, pay a fixed amount per month and we'll deliver the food in a box to you, ready for you to eat. We've both tried shakes, pills, all kinds of things over the years to very terrifying.
Yeah.
Yep. We've done it all. But the thing I think I hadn't realized is in order to make it stick, like reality that most people, if you cut back your calories or whatever you're eating, you're going to lose weight. But how are you going to make that stick? The point of this is actually finding a new way to live your life, right? Finding that way that you can have these things and continue to maintain a healthy weight. But I think the thing for groups, as somebody who, you know, when I initially joined groups, I was incredibly lonely, you know, like, and you talk about community, Margaret, and I think that is the word that brings to my mind first when I think of Slimming World, because just to know that you can be heard and understood by fellow people. When groups were open for what was it, however many, a few weeks in real group kind of situation in August last year, I remember there was only a handful of us at this one session, and it was one of the most powerful sessions that I've ever been to in my 8 years, where a woman whose husband had died 3 years ago, and she just said, I thought I was handling it, but then lockdown came and I just realised I am so unbelievably lonely. I just can't deal with this. And it was almost like by just saying it out loud, all of us in, you know, this handful of people were able to say, we know how you feel, and the bond that we formed. And when we check each other now, are you coming on Zoom? I'll see you there. We keep each other accountable. And it's like, just by saying out loud what you're feeling, I think that's where you start to remove the guilt.
And it's one of the most powerful things you can do is to allow yourself to be open and honest and not be afraid of being judged for whatever you're about to say, but you'll be understood. And people can empathize with what you're saying because it could easily be the same thing happening with them and they've not wanted to talk about it. But I think saying things out loud is incredibly powerful. But nobody understands that until they've done it, really. It sounds too simple, doesn't it? But it really does work. If you are in a group like Slimming World where people do understand, they really do understand what the problems are and the burdens that overweight people carry, however secretly, they're still there. You know, the guilt is terrible and it doesn't help. You know, you can keep kicking yourself, but you keep making yourself feel bad and bad, you know, really worse than ever. It doesn't help you to move on and to believe in yourself. And that's what we need to do, is to help people believe in themselves, because we know just how amazing everybody is and they don't know that yet. I'll
never forget when I first started as a Slimming World consultant, a member said to me, she said, Anna, Slimming World and you and this group, you are the only people in my life that believe in me. And that's what I need. And I think that was so powerful to me because I didn't realize I was opening my doors to all these people who not only needed the love and the support about their weight loss, but it was bigger than that. And once they dealt with the peripheral stuff, they could start with the weight loss. So yes. I think until you've been in a really powerful group, you don't know the magic you're about to unveil, do you? And I think that's a really key thing. Like I always say to my members, I will be your absolute cheerleader. And I'll also be your voice of reason that you might not always want, but we need you to have that balance so that you can charge forward. So it's a perfect mix.
It's quite overwhelming, don't you think, when you realise what you can do for people and how much you can help you.
Well, I'm not putting this down to me, but I watch Claire. Claire is a fine example of the person she was when she walked in my door to the woman that she has become. That's testament to her strength and her courage, but it's also testament to the fact that she's allowed that help to happen. So, you know, it's a really powerful thing when it's done right, isn't it?
It really, really is. And you've got to experience it to understand that, I think.
You've just got to try, haven't you? You know, if some people are thinking here, I'm thinking about joining Slim World, I know I need some support with this, I'm struggling on my own, then just give it a try. You know, it might not be wherever you are in the country, in the world, that you can go somewhere for like face-to-face contact, but there are virtual alternative like methods that Slim World's doing to make sure that support is there every week. I mean, I've got to say, like Margaret, like... consultants, okay, we know that a lot of consultants listen to this podcast and share the podcast with their members. I've seen, you know, I've got to know how consultants work, what it is like to be a consultant through like the amazing stuff that Anna does, knowing her now as a friend, not just as a member, and the dedication and the commitment and how difficult that's been, like just to keep up with the technology and the changing demands in the world. But have you got any advice for consultants who might be listening to this episode?
Advice, no, but appreciation, so much appreciation that I know it's been hard. I know some people have hated going on to virtual and then falling in love with it, and some people still are nervous about virtual, and we all can't wait to get back where we can all physically be together. So all I can tell you is how much we appreciate the effort that you're making, that you continue to make, and it's not going to waste. You will be helping people out there, and you're still doing such a great job. And I just want them to know that I know this with bells on. So do all the other directors. Everybody in the office is behind them and backing them, and we're doing everything we possibly can to support them in every way we can think of. And they do a great job. You know, head office are all behind the scenes, but they do a cracking job in looking after people as well. The culture of Slimming World isn't just in the group. It does go throughout the company. So thank you to everybody who's still giving their heart and soul to it, and especially to the consultants. So advice? No, I can't. It's just hang on in there, because know that you're doing a great job and know that you're appreciated, not just by me, and by Slimming World, but by members. Those members need you, and you know, don't walk away from them. Don't abandon them. This will not last forever. Things change. Nothing lasts forever. So things change, and you know, we want you with us. And we want to be with you as soon as they do, and throughout it all, throughout this whole miserable year that we've just gone through. It's going to get better.
It has to. And if there's one thing that we got from, you know, reading, listening to your book, Wild Women Do and They Don't Regret It, is my goodness, have you ridden some huge waves, Margaret. If someone knows how to come through tough times, how to dig themselves out of a hole with a fork or a teaspoon, perhaps, in some occasions, then it definitely is you. And my goodness, I don't know about you, Anna, but I really, really appreciate meeting you, because you were like kind of part fantasy, I think, to both of us.
It's made my day, like my week, my month, like literally. I can't tell you how I'm just so happy. Thank you
so much, both of you. You've been so nice.
Oh no, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Brilliant. Well, look, we will obviously put some links on our Instagram at Cinemaworld Podcast about the book and some of the things that we've talked about here. So go check out that. Thank you, Margaret. We should probably say next week, Anna, this is one of your favourite types, isn't it? Glam rags out, get the holy socks out. We are delving into your wardrobe. Well, not really. We're not really going into
your
wardrobe.
You're not going to come round, are you?
No.
Not got a clean, have I?
Well, I know how many blooming pyjama sets you have. So, but the point is, as spring is upon us, we are going to talk about the benefits of having a springtime clear out to let go of, wait for it, let go of who you were and become the snazzy dress glamour person you always wanted to be. Yes, sir.
Yeah, live the life you've always longed for. Eh?
That's it. Yeah. So get rid of the holy socks, all that kind of stuff. You need to probably have your headphones, a cup of tea, and go listen to next week's episode at the foot of your wardrobe as we share with you some of the horror stories that happen to be in ours. And Anna can maybe do a tally count of how many pyjamas she actually has now.
We're only at 79, we're fine.
On that note, have a great week, whatever you get up to, and remember, enjoy your food. Take care, guys. Thank you.
Bye for now.